Let's record the front of the show.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
It's recording.
Okay. Webcomics Weekly. Welcome to another edition. Across the desk from me, Scott Kurtz, PvPonline.com.
Don't say I didn't warn ya.
Across the nation is Brad Geiger of evil-comic.com.
It works for me and it'll work for you.
That's awesome. Dave Kellett in sunny California, SheldonComics.com.
Hello, I'm Brad Wigwam. And when I'm scratching my feet, I like to use a pen. It's good for the feet and it's good for the pen.
That is awesome. And I'm Chris Straub, starslip.com. No tag necessary.
Oh, I was going to go. And across from me is my
you were
lovely counterpart,
me?
Christopher Straub.
That's not bad. And then I'll do mine. Could be.
And it's time for another episode of Webcomics Weekly.
All right, let me know when we're starting to record.
Oh, we've been recording, son.
Oh, we have? Okay.
You're cussing already. This is a clean tag. Edit that out.
We won't put that up.
Well, hold on. Let me start over so I know for starting.
I think get to getting. I don't know what we should talk about this time. Do we want to just come up with a topic real quick right here at the top?
You know what? That one girl, I don't know if you guys got her email, the most recent one for the beginner question.
How dumb. That's a bag full of topics. All right, I'm going to go look.
Okay, so this last week we got like 7 or 8 emails. Let's see.
Wow, I'm so stupid.
How do you find an artist if you're a comic writer? That's a good question.
I'm incredibly dumb.
But I don't know an answer to my question.
Super unintelligent.
Are you like trying to get people to be like, come on, dude, no.
I'll never make it. I'm a
Here's
chump.
This one was directed to PvP and Starslip, but do you ever find that a minimalist cartoony style holds you back and tell a serious story? I don't think at all. I think that was the magic of Tauntaun was that he had this really simple, like, sweet line story, but he was telling these big stories, you know?
Dave. In French, it's Tintin, not Tauntaun.
What's that? Tintin?
It's Tintin.
Tintin.
but you're in America now, so it's Tintin.
I always thought it was Tintin.
It is Tintin.
It is in America and Canada, but
in French, you pronounce it Tintin.
In French, it's Tintin. When I went to Angoulême, Brad, I didn't know that it was pronounced Tintin, and so I'm going, oh boy, this Tintin, boy, that sure is some good stuff. And everyone's like, what the hell are you talking about? So no, this Tintin, is that some form of aluminum?
Wait a minute, it's not pronounced Tintin?
Not in French.
Well, what is it pronounced?
We've been saying it, and now I'm forgetting because everybody's pronouncing it differently.
Tintin. I just like to say Tintin.
Oh, it's Tintin. That's right.
That's stupid.
That Luke wrote on Hoth. The Tintin.
No, that's Tintin.
It is a Tintin. Tintin.
Tintin. Tintin, s'il vous plaît.
It is, how do you say, Tintin?
Tintin.
All right.
Boy, there's a big gap. How do French comics not at all translate to American comics, and American comics don't translate at all to French comics?
Because neither is funny to either culture.
Yeah, like neither culture gets the other one at all when it comes to comics.
That's probably good.
It's really funny. Giuseppe was telling me that in France, they don't want any other comics that aren't French.
That's true with a lot of French stuff, though.
That's just true of the French.
And he also, I told him that I thought European comics were better, and he said, no, it is all old stuff, nothing new. No new, all old characters, all old ideas. And he was like very pro-America when it came to comics, because that's where all the new ideas are happening.
Huh. Well, there's definitely more industry churn, so that probably makes sense.
What was that?
That was kiss, 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 kiss. He's very pro-American.
Kiss, kiss.
I know why.
Tintin.
I know why, too. For American women.
Hey. Let's go to Olive Garden. Right? That's Italian, right? That's real Italian.
How do you say, endless pasta bowl?
Endless breadsticks.
Endless breadsticks. I love the bottomless salad. All right, so what question do you guys want to talk to?
I actually, that question does intrigue me because that's something I don't like about my style, is that I think that it can't carry too dramatic, you know.
Why not?
Because I think that the art doesn't hold up. I think that you go, yeah, but they don't have any necks, and where's his face, you know?
Do you think there's a level of detail that a drawing needs in order to impart drama?
I think so. There is something I used to dislike about anime when
I
was...
You know what? You go against everything that Ziggy stands for, then.
Well, I am upset when he's holding the flower and it's drooping. So maybe you're right. That's drama. But one of the things that I used to not like about anime, but now I kind of have a flavor for it, is that everything on the character is so super detailed. And then you get up to the face, and it's just huge eyes, a slit for a mouth, and ears with no folds in them. But the clothing is super detailed. You could see every zipper and every stitch.
What is this now?
I'm talking about anime.
Oh.
You know, one technique that manga uses, not everybody, but some people in manga use that I really think is nice, is that let's say somebody's holding a sword. It's a cartoonish kind of character, and he's holding a sword. Well, the sword looks cartoony until, like, they zoom in on the sword, and then there's hyper detail on the sword.
Oh, yeah.
Because for that frame to see the detail, and then the rest of the book, it goes back to being a cartoony sword. I think that's an interesting technique.
Well, it's something they also – No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's a technique that you could apply in your own comic if you do a minimalist comic, that you can tweak the areas of detail depending on how much drama you're trying to convey.
Yeah.
That seems like a very unique stylistic choice, though. That wouldn't be a general rule.
What I'm basically asking you to consider, like, very subtly, is – okay, normally this is just an object, it's a prop, but for right now, for this frame or for this page, you need to consider it like the most important thing in this comic, you know?
No, I like it. I mean, I do like that. And the thing that it reminds me of is, you know, like Ren and Stimpy cartoons?
Yeah, they would do
the close-up, and it was a painted background, and there was just too much detail. There was hairs on everything, and it was just a filthy object.
And all that, so they do a close-up of somebody's nose or something.
Yeah. Right. That is such a great device.
Well, it's a great technique, too, because not only do they go super close-up, but they completely change the mediums that they're painting with. It's like cartoon acrylics.
No, it's awesome. So I don't know. I don't know that a super minimalist style holds you back from a lot of drama, but I think in certain cases it's better to have a more realistic style, you know?
So if you were starting a comic strip that was about, like, on a scale of, like, Frank Herbert's Dune or something, or Lord of the Rings, you would do it in a different style than what you've chosen now?
Yeah. I'm trying to work on a style that has kind of a combination of what I'm doing now and more of the gravity that I want. And I don't know how well that will work. But I think that it's...
Gravitas.
Exactly. But, you take it what is that method? The Socratic method? No. Sorry. I'm thinking of computer science. Base case. If you do a Dune-style, super dramatic, serious, long-form strip, and you're using stick figures, nobody will buy it. But stick figures would work for really simple humor, and a lot of people get by on that. But I think it works worse for drama. It doesn't work as well.
But maybe it's a way of a stylistic choice of saying, look, it's deceptively simple, but once you get into the story, like, I mean, it's sort of a Bone feeling, you know, maybe. I don't know.
He's got some complexity, though. But I think you need to start with your style and then work from there. I don't like the idea of saying, well, why are you doing stick figures? Oh, because I was trying to downplay the effects of realism on the – and I think that's just – covering your behind a little bit too much.
Actually, you know what? Bone, now that I think about it, Bone does what Tintin or Tintin does. Backgrounds are super hyper detailed and lush and beautiful, and the characters themselves are really simple.
Yeah, that is what I liked about that. About
Tintin. Tintin.
Tintin.
Tintin.
I like how we've just insulted the great Belgian nation here.
Tintin.
Tintin.
Emilu.
Well, if you read up on that stuff on the art of Tinton and that studio, they talk about how the name of that art is the simple line, right?
Oh yeah, I remember hearing something about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's called the simple line.
Oh, is it called literally the simple line?
Well, I read that. Yeah, I read that it's called the simple line.
It's a great technique.
Why don't I say that again? It's called the simple line.
They're calling it the simple line, and it's creating quite a stir.
So you've got to do it like a Belgian newscast. They are calling it the simple line.
They are calling it the simple line.
Simple line.
The line is simple.
I like how the three words I know or four words I know in French are tout à l'heure.
À tout à l'heure. À tout à l'heure.
Hatte, hutte, hutte, butte, schmutte, schutte.
All right. All right. Rein it in, gentlemen.
Sorry. Okay.
Somebody pull up a question. Let's get.
Yeah, let's get to the question. Get to the question.
Well, here's a good one. What process do you guys go through to get your comics ready for print collections?
Oh man, a laborious, awful process.
What happens
process.
If you want to print your color strips in color instead of black and white? I'd love to hear your general experiences on the subject. This is from Starline Hodge at CandyComics.com.
Okay, I am actually staying away from color because I think that it. I mean, it really drives up the print cost. But it's rough because nobody wants to see just black and white if you've got a color strip online. I don't know. You can do the we're looking at those Dazzler reprints, that route, the essential, and then you remove all the colors from it and just have the line work.
You know what? I'm starting to learn that depending on where you go, that I don't know that color costs that much more than black and white when you're doing a trade. I don't think the Justin trade cost us that much more than the PvP trades, but that might just be because I'm getting a benefit of printing through Image and they get discounts.
Yeah.
Well, does now I think about it because most of the Image books are printed in color, and so you get the benefit of having something printed at the same time as other color books. Is it my wife?
No, it's. I don't know. What
well, as an independent, I've found, and maybe Brad and Chris can price me up. When I get books quoted, I still get significantly higher prices, probably 30% to 40% higher, if not higher than that, for color than I do for black and white.
Yeah, I wasn't about to do a run of color because I.
But I agree with Chris though. If you're doing a strip online that's color, boy, that's going to be hard to sell as a black and white or grayscale book.
I don't know. Do you really think so?
Yeah.
I think you lose a lot of your. That visual interest. It's, I mean, you might be able to sell it to people who aren't familiar with the strip online. I'm not saying that you wouldn't be able to sell it at all, but it seems a shame to do it in color online and then lose it when you
right,
go to print.
What people gain in the portability and the ability to take it with them and, oh, it's a book form and it sits on your shelf, they lose in the fact that there's something actually more visually exciting online than what's in their book.
Yeah. So I don't know how I mean, that seems really difficult. But let's back out of that because that's kind of the tail end of the question and talk about the process of preparing stuff for print.
Well, why don't you take – since you did the Starslip book most recently, Chris, why don't you take us through your process?
Okay. I work in Vector, so it's not – so I can have any DPI I want, and that's the critical thing is that you – when you're printing a book, you have to have a high enough DPI. Brad can provide the exact number. I don't – I always play around at between 300 and 400 for
and
what
hey,
I have.
Real quick for beginners, explain just the basic difference between vector and bitmap.
Oh, okay. Vector is all math. All the lines are curves. So you can zoom in, and there is an equation that describes that line. So I can zoom in as far as I want, and I'm not going to get any pixelization because that line that I've drawn is described by math. As opposed to bitmap, which is what happens if you draw something on paper and scan it in. Those are actually pixels, and you zoom in far enough and you will see pixels and they will look like big blocks, big squares. And you can't, if your art is too low resolution. Like stuff on the web is 72 dpi dots per inch, right?
Yep. Right.
That will not look good on the printed page. You've got to get that up to 300. And the only way that you can do that if you're drawing your strip on paper and then scanning it is to scan it at the DPI you need or higher. So I've managed to sidestep all of that, and I export to 300 DPI. I usually would export to 600 DPI.
I'm so jealous of that. That's so cool that you get to do that.
No, that's an amazing. Well, just so for people that don't know, what Chris does, which what we don't do, is he draws in Flash, which is like Illustrator. It's a vector-based program. And the rest of us use Photoshop, I would imagine. Right, guys?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Although I know that the people at Image are putting the actual book together with InDesign, but that's the next step. I shouldn't jump ahead.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, that is the next step. But before you guys get too excited about Flash, ever since CS2, they have changed how the export image works, because Flash is not really designed to be a drawing tool. It's for web UI design and nonsense like that. They have wrecked the export image function. If I export at 300 DPI or above, I get a garbage image. I get pieces of the image, and it's terrible. So I don't know what I'm going to do for the next book, because I have to find a way to actually export those. I'm thinking I'll export.
You're doing it in Flash as opposed to doing it like in Illustrator or freehand.
What's the advantage? It was the tools that I knew best. I don't know Illustrator well enough to. The thing I use in Flash is the brush tool, and that behaves like a brush tool in Photoshop, where you can get the line width, the variation. You can use these other tools in Flash that let you do a single width line, like something you would see in Akewood. I don't know how the guy who does Akewood. But he may do it in Flash, and he may do it with the line tool or the pencil tool. But I like the brush. I want it to look a little more fluid. And I don't know if Illustrator has that.
I got a feeling you can do that same thing in Illustrator if you hook it up to a Wacom tablet and do that variable pressure setting. I think you can set the same thing up.
I would love to be able to do that, because I think that Illustrator is much better suited for what I'm trying to do, but I've never been able to track it down.
Well, that's the only problem. That's so easy to say, but then we're talking about an investment of between what, $500 and $800 on some of these applications, you know?
Well, yeah, but on top of that, that's what I'm saying. I don't know Illustrator, and every time I try to draw something, it's that spline fountain pen thing where you can adjust the endpoints and it bends the thing in the middle, and I don't know what that thing is. I don't like it. So, Brad, how do you manage when you do your strip every day? Do you you must scan it in at the DPI you're going to need?
Yeah, I scan everything in. First scan at 600 DPI, and then I know I can always go down from there for the things that are going on the web or anything I might convert to color. But 600 is the lowest for black and white line art that I'll even tinker with. And I have, for different projects, gone as high as 900 DPI.
Wow.
Yeah, that was and that wasn't even for like an offset printing project. That was for something that was that the publisher was demanding that I scanned it that high. And it was basically a glorified photocopy process. But they were demanding 900 DPI, which, again, if you're sticking to line art and if you're not doing any continuous gray tones, you can convert that to a bitmap and not have any problems with file size at all.
Hmm.
But a couple of notes I wanted to throw in there real quick before we got too far. We talked about PPI and we talked about DPI, and that confuses some people. There is no difference between dots per inch and pixels per inch.
Oh, okay, that's good.
If you're talking about 72 dots pixels per inch in one application, and you're wondering how that's going to translate, it's a fluid translation. Oh. DPI equals PPI.
And Brad, I've heard line per inch. What's that? What's that translation?
that's kind of a different thing too, and that gets into when you're dealing with continuous tone and so forth. I don't really deal with a whole lot of lines per inch unless I'm dealing with one of those halftone bitmaps. But in my experience, if you're dealing with something that's just a complete pixel-based grayscale or full-color image, the thing you really got to worry about is DPI or dots per inch. Lines per inch is how many lines of those dots will appear per inch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep.
That makes sense. That's more for like halftone bitmaps and stuff. That's not as important as your DPI.
Do you know the rule about that, Dave? About the grayscale? Because when I first started doing PvP with Dorkstorm Press, I didn't just do straight black and white like I do in my book now. There were grayscales, and John Kovalik had this rule of no gray tone. I couldn't remember. Was it no gray tone over 20% black?
Oh, yeah.
Because it gets muddied. I can't remember the percent, though, and I wish I could, because if you – and he was right. Maybe printing's changed, but if you did go over that percentage of black in your grayscales, the gray just becomes muddied. It puddles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's also true for newspaper printing. When I was first with United Media, they had their print specialist talk to me. And, you know, newspaper printing, as Brad can attest, does a whole separate CYM print and then a K print. And they ask for pure CYM color. So if a guy's shirt is blue, they want no or very little K in that value. Isn't that right, Brad?
That's right. Yeah, that goes into a whole nother thing that we'll have to talk about at some point. I've got kind of a system for doing that, but it's kind of hard to describe, and I want to think about how I'm going to present that.
Well, I could do it. I basically now I've gotten to the habit now where I color by channels, not by layers, which is unique to a lot of people, and it works fine, actually. I can do some stuff that you can't do in layers, but newspaper printing is sort of – it's not something you really want to learn, though, because not many people are going to be using that ever in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, modern printing has really gotten beyond what newspaper printing can do. So,
I found in newspapers is that anything below like 15% has a chance of disappearing completely, and anything over 50% has a chance of actually turning black.
Yeah.
So, what I've tried to do is keep it right in. I any gray that I use, I try to keep it right around 20-25, like Scott was saying. And much higher, and I realize that I'm taking a real risk.
Yeah, and a lot
unless
of
you have tone it.
In terms of when you're coloring, I don't know why this is coming up in my mind, but if you're ever going to do a differentiation like tone on tone, if someone's got a blue shirt and you want to have blue shadowing on their shirt, I find that you need a value in that color that's at least 15 points higher. So if pure blue is 100%, and somebody's shirt is 30% cyan, then you probably want to do your shadowing at 45 or 50% because you need at least 20 points of differentiation to show that color stepping. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's good.
But to get back to book preparation, so after you've scanned in, prepared your book, and for Chris, it's 300 DPI output, and for Brad, he scanned it, and he's brought it into Bitmap at a higher 600 DPI black and white format. Guys, what do we use for layouts? I think most people use either InDesign or Cork or PageMaker. Is that right? I don't know if anybody uses PageMaker.
I think PageMaker is now InDesign.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I've got a real good pro tip if somebody's got a pro tip stinger.
Pro tip.
There's a plugin that you can buy for...
Pro tip!
I know, that sticker went on for... I'm going to get the top back.
There's a plugin, in Quark Express, it's called an extension for Quark, and I think they make it for InDesign, too, and I'll check that out and post it on the forum, but it's called Badia. Badia, contact page, one word. And what it does is you put all of your files in a folder. You install your extension in Quark if you're working in Quark. And again, I'm almost positive they do the same for InDesign. And what you do is you basically open up a file and you, through your extension, say, you point to that folder and you say, here's all my files. I want you to put three per page, sized like XYZ, spaced like XYZ, hit the OK button, and it goes, and it gets all of your, if you've got an 80-page document, you push one button, it pulls in all of your comics in order and lays them out the way you want it.
So like an action in Photoshop.
It's exactly like an action in Photoshop.
Wow.
You know what? Steve Troop just emailed me a couple days ago saying he discovered something similar in InDesign, and he's going to show me how to do it. So I know it exists. He actually has figured out how to do it with CS3 InDesign, but he says it's possible with CS2 InDesign to do the same thing.
Huh. Yeah, it's got to be
a huge time saver. For anybody who's ever laid out a book, you know that's a huge time saver to be able to just hit one action button and have the whole thing lay itself out.
And it's actually pretty darn accurate. I go through and kind of, you know, I tweak it a little bit, but I have very little tweaking to do.
Yeah. I have been at this point preparing TIFF files that I send in to Image. Did they screw up or screw up? I didn't say it. What? Did they screw around with? They don't screw up. Did they screw around with an InDesign? And then Kirkman recently told me, stop doing that. You're wasting your time. You're not getting, you know, you're doing all this production work, and that's what Image is there for. And I said, I don't understand. He goes, just send them the strips. You say, here are 40 strips. They start here and go to there. This is the first one. This is the 40th. And put two per page. And then you give them a template of your letters page once, and they have that on file. And then every month you just send them a text file of your letters page, and they put it together for you. And I said, they'll do that? And he said, that's what the Image fee is for. You're paying them to do that for you. So I'm not going to have to be behind. I mean, that was a huge pain in the butt for me. So I feel kind of like a fraud participating in this discussion because I'm like, I don't know what you guys are doing about it. You just take all your strips and send them to Alan, and then magically a book appears.
That's A-L-A-N.
Alan Huey over at Image. Just send them to Alan. He'll do it. He's got even InDesign.
It's his job.
It's his job.
I just did a real quick Google, and it looks like Cassidy Systems does a plug-in for InDesign. It's C-A-C-I-D-I, and it's called Contact Sheet Pro 2.0. It's $149.
Oh, okay. Well, Steve is telling me he's discovered something inside InDesign itself. So when I find that out, I'll press.
That's better yet.
Yeah, because if it's native to the program, it's better, you know. But anyway, so then once we've laid out the program or the book in InDesign or in Quark, all of us then go out and see quotes from printers. And in Scott's case, he obviously doesn't have to do that going through Image. But let's see, Chris most recently printed through Canada, right? I almost said Canada.
In Canada, yes.
Canada, right? And
the man could pronounce Tim Tin, but he can't pronounce Canada.
And then Brad printed in the U.S.?
Yeah, I printed through Lulu for my first few go-arounds, and then I'm going to be kind of following your model, David, in a little bit.
Right, and I'm going through China. My first book was done through Quebecor in Canada, in Quebec, and then my last two books have been done in Guangzhou province, China, and then shipped over to the U.S.
Do your books have magnets and lead paint in them?
They do, and I try to make sure that my books are made by 8-year-olds. I don't want anybody above 8 working on my book.
It's just good business.
It's just good business.
Well, they've got those nimble little fingers.
Right. I got a reference to a great printer in China from a Mattel person, and have followed up with them because I know a couple of Americans that live over there now, and so he's my middleman on that, and they're really nice. Company, a family-owned company, and they do great books. The Sheldon books came out great, as did the Star Slip book, which was done through Transcontinental, right?
Yep. Now, here's the question. Oh, wait. What were you going to say, Scott?
I was going to say, I turned Chris on to Transcon because I really like those guys. We used them at Image for a while before they moved back to Le Beaufort and Quebec, Tintin, Tonton, and... I really liked their work and the quality of the work, and then Chris got a really good deal, and so I'm glad it turned out. But then we went to San Diego, and we love your cover stock, Dave. There's something about your cover stock that is superior to all other cover stock.
Yeah, it was a heavier. It was a matte.
Well, you know what it did? What I did is I took a micrometer and asked for a bunch of paper stocks from China. Because, you know, Chinese printing is done not on the North American English system. It's done on a metric system. So when I was ordering, I wanted to make dang sure that I didn't order something that turned out to be tissue paper. So I asked them to send me a bunch of different cover stocks. And then I used a micrometer to measure the one that I wanted. And I had people do blind sort of taste tests where they would feel it between their fingers and bend it and feel which one they liked best. And I actually was really happy with the cover stock I ended up with. So I'm glad you guys liked it. That's good.
No, it's great. It put mine to shame. Is the important thing.
Well, you know what, too, is that the life of the book lasts a lot longer with a good cover. And I think that the next Star Slip book, because Transcon did a beautiful job with the Star Slip book, but if you ask for a heavier stock cover next time, I think you'll end up with a much
book,
you know.
Sorry, phone calls everywhere and packages. And I'm juggling as we're doing this. So what? Here's a question for you guys. You went through, Brad. You're still going through Lulu. I did two books with them, and I did three books with them. And in fact, my technical manual and the Checkerboard Nightmare book are still with Lulu. At what point would you recommend that people go beyond print on demand and actually get a print run done?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because that was a big step for me. But and print on demand. I mean, Lulu worked great for a long time, but the margin for – I just wasn't making enough money on each book.
I think for me, at the time that I started approaching Diamond Distributing for doing a wider distribution just beyond what I was doing on the web, then it was time for me to start looking at some of these other approaches. Mm-hmm. That's when print on demand kind of got to be too high of a cost for me. But I do have to say this. I talked to the Lulu people in San Diego, and they know about that problem, and they're really trying to come up with some way to address it. But until they have that in place, I think once you're starting to look at doing wider distribution, you've got to start looking at doing these, you know, 2,000, 3,000 print runs and finding a place to store them.
Yeah, storage is a pain, too.
Yeah, that storage is another good issue to bring up that's related to that. It's that it's not just a matter of how many can you sell, and it's a matter of can you physically store in a dry, safe place 2,000 to 6,000 books or you know, however many books you're going to order.
Yeah.
Because that's a big deal. If you're living in an apartment and you might be moving every 6 months or so, it's going to be hard to do. If you're living in a house and you've got four kids and they're taking up all the room, it's going to be hard to do.
And if you're a homeowner, I would strongly suggest adjusting your homeowner's insurance to reflect that you've got that stock in your house. So if does happen, you've got some kind of recompense.
Hi, I got to go change my homeowner's insurance.
Well, that does it for Webcomics Weekly this week.
Yeah, I panically run off. Whee! Hey, got to go.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, I've thought about that. Insurance. Where the heck am I going to put these books? And all we've got is the basement. It's like, you know, if we have a flood or something, I'm in real trouble.
Well, I was talking with Chris yesterday or 2 days ago that at a certain point, I'm now considering, because I converted my garage into an artist studio, and that sounds like I just threw a desk back there, but I put some money into it, and it's got a lot of storage back here just for the books. But by the time I get to book four, which is going to be around Christmas, I'm going to start running out of room. So come book five, which is going to be spring or summer, I'm going to need to look at either warehousing or renting a permanent office space around Los Angeles that's half warehouse, half studio. Mm-hmm. So it does. It makes a big difference on your life when you start having to store 10,000, 15,000 books at a given time.
Absolutely right.
So it's not, and even the first shipment, if you're on book one, if you order even as little as 1,000 books, that can be a lot of space taken up. So that's something to consider. And
that's an expense,
but,
too.
What's that?
That's an expense, too, because, man, I've looked around here. I mean, depending on where you live, I live here in Philadelphia, and I'm looking at some of these warehouses and self-storage places that are between $20 and $50 a month. Well, that's going to take a real bite into your profits. You start doing that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why my advice is to someone that's considering this path is baby steps and controlled baby steps along the way. Try Lulu first. See if there's how much interest there is in your books. So that way you're not out of pocket a lot. Then after you sold a few hundred, you know, okay, well, I'm going to crunch the numbers. I'm going to see what would that have made me had I owned that stock of books outright versus paying Lulu $8 or $9 per book. And then you say, all right, you know what, book two, I can afford to do a print run of, I don't know, what's a small print, 2,000 books, and see if I can make my money back. And crunch the numbers and make sure you're crunching them correctly and take it step by step. You know, don't suddenly rush into it and go on, you know what, I'm doing books and I'm ordering 15,000 copies and they're all going to be.
Well, Lulu is a great first step for anybody getting into self-publishing. I mean, that is undeniable. They're really good for that.
Yeah.
But at some point, you've got to, as with everything you're doing as a self-publisher, you've got to start keeping really good records. And what did it for me is I remember saying to my wife, I don't know whether I can put, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 into a print run. And I went back just on because it put the thought in my head. I went back and I looked what I had put into books through Lulu, and it was easily $2,500. And that's when it hit me. I'm already putting between $2,000 and $3,000 into these books. The only difference is if I have a mass production setup, I'm making a lot more profit on that expenditure.
Right, right. And that's what you'll realize as you take that first baby step is that Lulu will prove to you that you have enough of an audience and readership to pay for a self-printed run.
Right.
And the self-printed run, the first one, may not make you a living, but by the time you're getting into book two, three, and four, you have all four of them working for you at any time, and it starts to make up a not insignificant chunk of income.
Yep, because now when people are coming up to you at a convention, they're not buying one book. Or maybe they're not getting turned on, you know, by that one book, but now they're buying two and three, and you know, it's an exponential thing. You know, when Dave, you can, I know each of you guys can talk about this, but I know, Dave, you just had one come out recently. When somebody comes in, when you've got a new book coming out, people don't just buy the new book. They buy the new book and the earlier books that they don't have yet.
Yeah, and that's true with a lot of new readers, and because, you know, the cost of shipping makes it worthwhile for them to buy all three at once. But then I also have existing readers that bought the first book or second book or whatever and want to give – they'll buy a three-pack in order to give the first one to their mother or, you know, their brother or somebody. So they get a birthday gift and something for themselves too. So it ends up over time really working out for you as your library gets bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a growing process, and don't my huge advice is don't try to rush that process. It's going to take you 2 to 3 to 4 years to sort of build up your confidence after a Lulu run and your first print run and all that sort of stuff. But you know it's doable. But make sure that your personal finances can afford it, and make sure that you can make your money back on the run so that your husband or wife is not screaming at you. and just to be cautiously optimistic, I guess, is one way to say it.
Now, listen.
I'm going to unplug this phone real quick.
Good man.
How does everybody feel about mini comics? I mean, I know that they have been considered maybe for a long time the forte of the independent or alternative comics guys, but. I don't want to discount the idea of mini comics because I used to make them and a lot of people make them. And you guys are about to go to SPX and you are really going to see an explosion of those mini comics. And it's very much a do it yourself proposition, especially at when you're going to a convention and you need stuff to sell at a convention.
Mm.
Are you guys? I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you guys think mini comics are a bad idea?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think they're a bad idea. I haven't had a lot of luck with them myself, but I'm talking about the ones where maybe it's 10, 15 pages. It's like a photocopy stapled together. Is that what you mean?
Well, there's all kinds of different amounts of production value you can put into them. I've seen people. Use a copier that clearly was like they went to their dad's office and used his copier, you know. And then I've seen people that go to a Kinko's and actually put some really decent production value into it. No?
I think that this is one of those sliding scale things. I think that's a really great way to go when you're starting out and you're trying to get your name out there and everything. But for the expenditure of time that I'd have to put into doing something like that, I don't know that I'd see the return that would make me want to do it.
Yeah, I'm trying to offer.
What?
Yikes.
Woof.
Where to start?
I wouldn't do one now. I can assure you that for me the time and effort wouldn't be worth either the feedback I got on it or the economic return on it. But do they, and I'm asking this naively and honestly, do they help someone at a certain level? Do they get the word out on a strip? Do they help you get something for the publisher?
I think the whole idea of the mini comic is that even the print on demand stuff, the Lulu print on demand stuff, if you're going to go to a print on demand stuff for online, is you put it up and you sit there, and then if someone orders it, they print it, and it was $15 and Lulu takes $7 and then you get a check. But if you want to go to a convention and have something to sell to people, even when you are going to do through Lulu, that means you have to print some up for yourself and bring them to sell, and that can get expensive, especially through Lulu with that print on demand stuff, because now it's not being made as it's ordered. Now you're buying a small inventory to take somewhere. So I remember one time I tried to give away one of Chris's books, and he gave me a look like, don't give that book away. I lose money on those books. You know, I didn't print these like you. And so when you go to these conventions and I mean, I guess it's maybe one step up from flyers. I don't know. I just wanted to not discount it because I remember going to the SPX that first year, going to the Kinko's, making some mini comics, walking with a box of comics I made, and then selling them and people being excited about it. And it just, I don't know, there's a feeling of, I don't think it's a solution for making books that you're going to sell and that are professional, but as far as having them to hand out as promotional tools or even having them to sell as product at the con, because I think there's going to be a lot of people listening right now that have strips that don't have enough readership to maybe even support a Lulu.com thing.
Well, the thing is that you can do – well, you mean buying Lulu for yourself? Because you can put a book on Lulu and it doesn't sell a single one, and you are not out anything except for the time it took to make it. You know.
Well, you know what it might be, and maybe I'm imagining this wrong, but is it the kind of thing where if like I think what sold it for me, Scott, is when you said it's a step above a flyer. Like if you're giving out a flyer with one or two comics or a page of your comic on it, that's free, but it costs you however many cents to make that flyer. But if you can sell a mini comic for a buck or two and they get to read 10 to 20 pages, is that about right? And then you've made maybe 50% on your margin from that. Maybe that's worth it at a convention. If it makes you $50 or $100 – And helps cover your cost for that convention, that might be worth it if you're just starting out, yeah.
Well, and also, if nothing else, it gives you something that you can afford to have in stock for cons.
Well, that's true, because you don't want to go to a con empty-handed.
That's what I'm saying.
We disagree with you, clearly.
I'm fine with you guys disagreeing. I just don't understand where the trepidation is. You guys seem really like freaked out.
No. I think I'll step back then. For someone that's in the first 6 months of their comic or first year of their comic, yeah, no, I think that is a good idea. If they can make it, just as I said before, just crunch the numbers, and if it works for you economically, both in terms of either making you money or losing money at a rate that you find acceptable in terms of promotional materials, then yeah, it's definitely worth it.
We can all agree that to go to a con and not have anything to sell.
Want to delve into this. This reaction is unprecedented. I think there's something else going on here that I don't know about.
You clearly just insulted somebody's religion, and they've gone quiet now.
Well, this is weird. It's like you guys are going to go to SPX soon. I got some news for you. There's going to be a lot of guys with mini comics there. And then if they're going to have heard this, and they're going to know something's up.
I love Brad's laugh. Brad gets to a certain point. It's like, oh, I love it.
I just can't wait for someone to come up to you guys and be like, what do you guys got about
the comics? Just giving them to us just to see us sour up our faces and say, oh, mini comics.
Hey guys, I'm a big fan. I listen to the Webcomic Weekly podcast, never miss it. And I wanted to show you my comics. And you're like, oh, awesome. Who'd you go through? Transcontinental? Oh, no, I couldn't afford that. Oh, cool. Lulu.com? No. I made some mini comics. And you guys just go, boo. And Dave just spins around, hands in his pockets, looking up.
Oh, God.
Look, making those mini comics is certainly a valid lifestyle choice. I'm not judging you. I'm certainly not upset about that.
It's not for everybody, but
it's not something I'm interested in. But
I was just like, I want to bring up mini comics, you know, because a lot of people make mini comics, and I'm sure the guys will be like, oh yeah, you know, that's a good way. I go, so guys, what about mini comics? Because you know, mini comics are.
Oh.
What's the deal?
Over the corner going, ha,
yeah, that's the funny. Dave, you don't laugh, Dave. You were. That is not a bit. You were going, ha. Listen to Dave. What do you?
I thought that was like a Cessna taking off.
I said, "How about mini comics?" And your response, I'm playing it back. Your response, Dave, was, "Yeah, ha."
Oh, God. Well, you know what it was? When I was starting out with Sheldon, it just was something that I never considered.
This is a personal choice. It's not that it's bad. There's nothing wrong with making mini comics. But, I mean, it's a personal choice. Everyone's got their own lifestyle.
Look, I didn't want to say this, but I had a cousin when I was younger, when I was about 12 years old. He made me make mini comics with him.
Oh, Chris, I thought you were going to go in a different direction. I had a cousin. It was Bob. I loved him, and he was killed by mini comics.
He was killed by a mini comic.
I don't care what you say, Margaret. No son of mine's making.
Here's what's going to happen.
Him up for football.
Some kid's going to come over. Some kid's going to come over with his dad. And he's going to be like, hey, guys, my name's Bob. I'm into cartooning. And, you know, my dad was, you know, I brought him to SPX so he can see what it's all about. I'm really excited to meet you guys. And I made some books. I wanted you to have a book. Oh, awesome. Did you go through Lulu? No, I couldn't afford Lulu. I made some mini comics. And you guys just kind of go, oh, and look around. And the kid's like, what? And then the father slaps the kid and goes, you're killing your mother.
This is not how we raised you.
Oh, my God, you guys. We are so setting ourselves up because we are going to – when we go to SP Expo, we're going to have to take bets right now. I want to go around the room here. Give me an over-under. How many mini comics are we going to collect by the end of SP Expo?
How about all of them?
I'm putting it up upwards of about 50. I want to do a count because everybody's going to bring us their mini comics now, and we're going to just be inundated with them. We might as well at least – set up a pool and make some money off of this. So I've got 50.
Okay. Well, what's the over under? Poo.
Or you, anything over is automatically discounted.
That's right. So it's got to be as close to the number without going over. I got
so
50.
If that's 50, I'm going to say 51.
You bastard.
There goes
the clean tag.
27. I want 27.
It's a strategy. I'm going to say zero.
No, you know what? I'm going to summarize why I was never a fan of mini comics for me personally as a personal choice.
Hold on 1 second, Dave. Hold on 1 second. Hold that thought. One. Brad is 50. Dave is 51. 50. Chris is zero, and I said 27.
27?
Yeah.
All right. How much are we putting up on this?
I'll put in $20.
$20 on it.
Oh, wait. Well, can I do a non-joke answer if we're going to actually put money on it?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that you guys were fiends.
Oh,
Hey, I got a half of a cardboard box. Let's play dice.
All right,
you know
give me
we're
a real
have a break dancing camp.
Give me a real number, Chris. Come on.
Okay, so
Chris,
it was
if you're a smart man, you'll say 1.
It was 50-51-27.
Yeah.
Oh, what are you saying 27?
Yeah.
Oh, well then that's a strategy, right? If I said 1?
Yes, if you is that your strategy then is you get 1 through 26.
If you say 1 and they only get 5,
then that's me? No, dude, then it was a smart answer, wasn't
it? If you
it?
Say 1 and it's between 1 and, what, like 15?
26.
Or 20? 20, no. If it's 26.
You've got 27.
Yeah, but if it's 26, it's closer to 27 than 1.
We're not doing
no,
closeies.
If you've got 27, it's 27 and you win.
It has to be the exact number? What if no one hits the exact number?
No, we're playing Price is Right rules.
It's the closest to the number without going over. If it's 27 and you've chosen 27, you are the closest without going over.
Oh, so if he says 1, he can only win if it's 0 or 1.
No.
That's a good point.
Never watch Price is Right.
I got things to do, Dave.
It's you never closest. Got sick in your childhood and stayed home from school.
No, I did, right? But I guess I don't understand the math of it.
I just like that wheel.
The closest to the number without going over.
Right.
So if it's 26, who wins?
Then Chris does with 1.
No, I had 27.
No,
but you went over.
Right rules.
You went over, so you don't win.
God, oh.
I'm trying to explain the Mayan calendar to you, Scott.
Okay, jeez. All right, no, I went over, right. If it's 28, I win.
Right, right. If it's
Dave is going nuts. How can you understand this?
I'm out. This is going to ruin our friendship.
So you want 1, Chris. You want 1?
All right, what the hell?
All right.
You know better than that, Scott. You've been there, right?
But that's my question.
I'm telling you, guys, we're going to get every mini comic that's in the whole room. We're just going to have to start a pile.
Dave.
Yes.
Closest to the number without going over.
Good.
Right.
If he picks 1, then how can he possibly win?
Because
if we get any number of
because everybody else went over.
1 and 26.
I win by
that's
default.
Closest without going over.
Oh, I see.
Because the
what
next
you're saying.
One is 27, but 27 goes
I didn't,
over. 26,
I didn't guess
so
it right.
One
but
is closest with all
you all
over.
Bust.
So if you get none, then you lose. But if it's any, no, okay, I get it. All right.
And now we'll see how spiteful people are. We get none because we didn't want Chris to win.
They've all unionized.
All right. Okay, so I've got it. Now we can move on. Now, Dave, what were you going to say against the sweet people that just were born? Wanting to make mini comics.
Not my baby heart. Go gentle. No, what I was going to say, and this will be my last thought on it, is that for me it was a matter of the ROI, the return on investment. And for me, the better ROI with promotional stuff is cheaper flyers, which can be done for under 10 cents per unit. If you're doing a mini comic, which is, I don't know, anywhere from 40 cents to probably $3 per unit, plus the time to staple and sort it, for me, that's why I never did one, because the odds are 50-50, maybe worse, that someone's not going to like your sample when you give it to them at a convention. So better to be out 10 cents when you make that delivery versus being out $3 when you give them a mini comic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That makes sense, too.
That's why I personally always made the choice of flyers versus – but then again, I have a short-form comic. If you have a long-form comic, you might need a mini comic to give them enough of a taste to be a sample.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I was suggesting mini comics as the product itself, not as an example.
Oh, okay. Well, that's different then.
Then definitely not. Then no, never do that.
No, in no way. No, exactly.
What is this hippie stuff on my table? Who brought these mini comics? All right, look, let's change the subject because we're at 54 minutes. Do we have tips or were our tips inside there?
You know what? I think. It's real tough to actually come up with tips that are like, here's a broad tip, because I don't come up with those during the week. I come up with them while we're talking.
Here's a tip. Don't be seen with a mini comic around Brad or Dave. All right.
Hate
so, hey,
crimes.
Listen. This is a good, solid. It's got humor. It's got tips. It's got.
it's got alienation.
It's got alienation. It's got distractions.
It's got Brad, laughing.
I say we're good at 54 minutes. So, Chris, do a little outro for us, and I'll do some background music.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us on Webcomics Weekly. I've been Christopher Straub of Starslip.com. That was Scott Kurtz of PvPOnline.com, Brad Geiger of Evil-Comic.com, and Dave Kell at SheldonComics.com. Coming up next is World Beat.
All right, guys. Thanks for a good show.
See you guys.
Thank you.
That was fun.
Bye, Brad.